We're going to call the meeting to order. Do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum with all members present, except for Mr. Larson. Will he be joining us by phone? Except for Mr. Larson.
Thank you. Please read the board goals.
Mat-Su Borough School District, our vision. Mat-Su Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, Mat-Su Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, and commitment. Goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Our annual objectives are assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Thank you. Member McPhail, can you lead us in the pledge, please? Thank you. This takes us to item two, approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
A motion has been made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Is there any dissent in approving the agenda? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. This takes us down to item three, persons to be heard on non-agenda items. So there's, as always, we have to cite the rules. Specifically under the agenda item, persons to be heard. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. Speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. Speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may be attributable to any specific individual. May not be attributable. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be brought through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or a group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. Board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. Maximum 1 hour per meeting. This is the first half, 30 minutes. And we have one individual signed up, Debbie Rutherford. Please come forward. State your name for the record.
Do I need to push any? Oh, there, the red light's on. I want to speak briefly about the State School Board Association resolutions that you're going to address later today. I was here at the last meeting, and there was some concern about four of them, and one of them in particular, the discussion especially concerned me. I realize that these are just that these are goals, and the time to really spend our time and energy is if and when they get before the legislature, and that they all would need some tweaking then. But there was one that regarded advocacy and assessment of students outside the system, which, yes.
This is on the agenda?
Yes.
Right, and the time you have now is for non-agenda items. So if you want to speak to that item, you'll have 3 minutes.
Oh, you
minutes.
Will have? I thought
yes.
Because it was under action item that you wouldn't be
no.
asking.
No,
yes.
You will.
You will?
Yep.
Okay, so would you rather when we come to that point?
Please.
Okay, sure.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak before the board on non-agenda items at this time? Seeing none, we'll have another 30 minutes towards the end of the meeting. Thank you. This takes us down to borough and city reports. Palmer, please come forward. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, Superintendent Paramo. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the city manager of Palmer. I did give you a written report, so I won't go into everything. There are basically three items on it. One is just by way of keeping you posted that sort of an internal thing within the city of Palmer, we have made application to move the land that the Nutrition Center on Cope Industrial Road is on from our borough, our airport account into a city account. We've been working with FAA on that. It does include those the two ball fields next to the Nutrition Center. And that's got to go through a federal process, which is pretty lengthy. It could take another 4 to 6 months. But the indications we get from the FAA is that that's going to be received favorably. And that's one of the things that the City of Palmer is having to address as part of kind of righting the ship with regard to our operation of the airport. The next is just to thank the school for hosting our safe routes to school. I know at the last meeting we had our consultants address you about that. I thought the workshop, while it was not very well attended, I wish there had been more. It was a really informative workshop, and it's just the beginning of a couple more visits from those consultants throughout the winter. And then finally, this last week, we had the pleasure of hosting a delegation from Soroma, Japan, you know, our sister city in Japan. We had some middle school and high school visitors and two chaperones that were in Palmer and the greater Matsu Valley for, I think, about a week. And we had a great time renewing or starting relationships with those individuals that came to visit with us. So that's really all I have. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Wasilla?
You pushed it and I pushed it. Okay, Mr. President and board members, I have two items tonight. My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. First item is the Friends of the Wasilla Library will be having a book sale, their fall book sale this Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's going to be out at American Legion Post 35, mile 46 on the Parks Highway, and that starts at 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. each day. Books are $1 for hardbacks, 50 cents for softbacks. It's a heck of a deal. Number two, the 4-Acre Group and the Library Needs Committee has started meeting for the next phase of the library, so we're getting one step closer. And that's all I have, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are no administrative reports, so this takes us down to item six, Superintendent Updates, Student Advisory Board Representative Report. Member McPhail, do you have a report? Thank you.
Our first Student Advisory Board meeting was at Wasilla High School, and Member Welton was in attendance. During our first meeting, we had a discussion of goals from all schools. One of our significant goals is to have collaborative ideas between high school and middle school on a student level with service projects and team projects. Our next Student Advisory Board meeting is October 10th, and the place is still being determined.
That's it. Thank you. Dr. Paramo?
Sorry, Mr. President, there's just, I was on my screen. Thank you. And I just wanted to have a few things to announce. Standing on the superintendent's update is both the enrollment and bond project update. Mr. Forrest will present the bond project update, and we will move extensively into the enrollment update on item B under action items, as enrollment significantly affects the budget. And so you will see some amendments. Before we get to that, however, I wanted to mention we are experiencing some problems with enrollment, and we will specifically review that during that time. As far as students, people, actual people, we have just barely missed our projection. However, due to the fact that our schools count FTE, full-time equivalents, and not actual, it's a state calculation, and where we fell short in schools that have multipliers for small school factors. So we're going to demonstrate to you today that we were able to move forward and adjust the budget and stay whole, but again, it's really through the skin of our teeth, shall I say. So funding for our school district will always remain a topic of conversation because of the expenses. But before I get into all those difficult conversations to have, I want to let you know that it is a mid-quarter of the first quarter. So we are one-eighth of the school year completed. And we have some exciting things going on around our district. Please know that the United States Army Field Band Jazz Ambassadors are performing this evening. I regret that the board can't see it tonight, but tomorrow at 8 a.m. there's another performance. And this opportunity came to us as a member of the Wasilla Chamber at Burt Hall offered us this opportunity. And it's a wonderful opportunity for our kids, as well as we have the Arctic Chamber Orchestra coming Thursday. To meet one of the board goals, we're already starting. If you see a big semi with Ford driving school on the side of it, please know that Palmer High School and Wasilla High School are participating in the national event of the Ford driving school, and so kids are experiencing getting to drive in a very cool Mustang. However, they're driving with objects in front of them and goggles that make it clear that texting and driving or drinking and driving are just not the way to go. So it is an exciting event, and the win today made it even more exciting. District-wide, as you know, we are moving forward with the state statute in regard to suicide prevention. All ninth graders in our district will be provided the suicide, awareness piece so that we'll meet that goal from the state. And all letters went home to freshman parents, so parents were aware, and they can go to their school and opt out of that by state law if they choose. I wanted you to know that one of the goals last year was to increase graduation rate by 2%. I'm sad to say it hasn't been published yet, but I'm happy to say it increased by 1.55%. If we rounded it up, I'd say we made it, but we are improving every day. Finally, because we are sitting here in the city of Palmer, I must announce that your Moose are number one in state football. So that is a brief update of the good things. Now we're going to move to the bond project update, and Mr. Forrest will assist. Oh,
I did have a question. In regards to the suicide prevention kit or presentation, is there a reason why ninth grade and not earlier? Because my understanding is that a lot of kids that are in middle school, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, many of them are actually in stages where they might be considering this. Maybe not in Alaska, but certainly in the lower 48.
No, through the president, Mr. Cordero, you hit the nail on the head. It actually is a training from 7th through 12th. We've just started with ninth grade. We're operating on a trainer of trainers, and the trainers actually have to be trained a certain amount of time. So it's just the rollout of it. But you're correct. It will move all the way down to 7th grade.
Thank you. And any questions from the board? Thank you, Dr. Paramo.
Thank you. Part of our announcements at the very beginning of the school year, we talked about being part of something great. And so Mr. Forrest is going to talk about the great things that are happening as far as building our infrastructure in the Mat-Su School District. He's going to discuss the capital projects and our local projects as well, and knowing the difference between them. It's coming. We have it.
Okay, as Dr. Paramo mentioned, we have lots of projects that have been going on. The key here is if you see the Borough Public Works logo, then the borough was responsible for the project. So 8 re-roof projects, obviously, still in progress. New carpet for 8 schools, new gym floors, still in the planning stage. So as you see, as we go through here, you'll see some pictures of some of the work that's been done. A lot of work, and this goes back, as you see, to the 2010 school bond. Some of the other things, here is the status on a number of jobs. We're hoping that some of these roof projects don't go backwards with regard to percent. This whole presentation has been posted to the web. So some examples of the ongoing roof work, Palmer Junior Middle is one. Replacement, carpet replacement. You can see most of these are complete, but not all are done. Gym floor replacements are in design, so we'll probably look at those, we hope, right after school gets out. Good example of some carpet work being done, and ADA improvements with some samples. So here you can see they replace curbs, redo restriping, make the curb cuts for the ADA replacements. Traffic improvements at Pioneer Peak, and fire alarm panels. They're started, three more to go, but they're complete on the upgrades to all of these schools. Now we start in on some of the 2011 bond projects. There were 121 school projects approved as part of the bond. 21 projects have been started in 2012. Here's the status of the projects, as you can see, that have been started. Some of them are just barely started with a lot of implementation to come later. Some others that are in design, and the Academy Charter classrooms, however, are well on their way. If you drive by, you can see that. Now, we're moving into some projects that the district itself funded through CIP. We were able to paint the exterior of three schools. We put in some new fencing, made some boiler repairs, glycol replacement, significant infrastructure improvements. We have also some Houston bus turnaround was completed, and a playground upgrade at Iditarod, for example. So if you haven't driven by Palmer Junior Middle School, I would encourage you to do so to look at the work that both the with regard to the paint and the work that the borough's doing on the roof. Trapper Creek was repainted, as was Talkeetna. This is an example of what we are trying to sell the borough on with regard to fencing. The district installed this fence, and the green stripe underneath is called MoStrip, and it significantly reduces ongoing maintenance costs, all but eliminating any trim requirement. The mower can mow right up to the fence and solves the trimming requirement. Parking lot refresh, you can see, I'm sure you noticed some of these if you've driven to these schools. Makes a significant difference. We did have some issues with regard to the product to actually resurface some of these. So we're getting an earlier start for this coming spring to ensure that we have enough product. We had supplier issues. New boiler system at Swanson. And, of course, the new boardroom was done by the kids. New sidewalk replacement at Trapper Creek. And here's an example of a significant upgrade to the playground structure at Iditarod. Some of the other things that are well on their way, the road, of course, is done at Cottonwood Creek Elementary School, but I was informed that today they were able to go the entire length of the field, and they're 20 feet wide on the sod on the replacement soccer field. So they're well on their way to getting that done. Some other things, as you can see, are still underway, and many more that are funded, but as yet to be scheduled. Some of these are borough, some of these are the school district. Some significant areas of shortfall, however. We have significant roof issues continuing within the district, and that is major maintenance that is funded by the borough, some of it coming from that 2010 bond issue. There is also additional money in the 2011 bond that could be tapped. So the new roof for Swanson is a very high priority, and a new roof for Colony High School. With regard to Colony High School, some of you are aware that there are significant leaks and some concerns with regard to mold. Please know that the Facilities Department is doing continuous inspections. Any mold that is found is mitigated very rapidly to ensure that we don't have that respiration hazard for our students or staff. Here's an example of what Swanson looks like on a day when it's raining. And this is an example of what the colony roof looks like. And no, roofs aren't supposed to look quite like that. Questions?
Are the borough projects, are they on schedule?
Some are and some aren't. I would say the roof projects are behind what they originally anticipated. Some of that relates to the abatement they had to have.
And given the weather that we have, are we incurring additional damage because the roofs aren't fixed?
At the present time, damage that's being incurred is being covered by either the contractor or the borough.
Okay, so there will be no cost to the district?
There will be minimal cost. I won't say there will be no, but it will be minimal.
The other projects that the school district did, are they in the range of $30,000 or less?
Some are greater. Some are greater.
Okay. Member Cordero?
That was from earlier. That's from
earlier. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dunleavy, I do have one more announcement under the superintendent update. It is the pleasure of your colleagues on the school board, as well as myself and administration, and all the people to say thank you for your service. And in light of your conservatism, we made sure that we didn't get you anything too extravagant. You have your official gavel that you've used for the last 2 years as president. And Wasilla High School made this for you.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much.
And we'd like you to say a few words, but then after that, if you would approve a break, we also, it's wonderful that so many students are here from our leadership classes because we have cake.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I can't really bang it, but I really appreciate the gavel, and it'll be put in a special place. Just briefly, I think the greatest pleasure I got out of being on the board is actually helping and creating an environment, I hope, for teachers to succeed and administration to succeed and all the folks in this room to succeed in. And I think we have the best school district in the state of Alaska. I think we're going from very good to great. And I'm just happy to be able to have served the folks and students of this district for 3 years. So thank you very much, and let's take a quick break.
And we are taking a recess, a quick break. There is a cake being distributed for the last meeting of the chair, Mr. Dunleavy. And so we'll be back when the meeting starts. We'll continue the stream from the Radio Free Palmer of the September 19th school board meeting in Mat-Su Borough School District.
Okay, we're going to start. We're out of recess. We're down to item 7, consent agenda. Is there a motion to move the consent agenda?
I'd like to make a motion that we move the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Cordero. Is there any dissent to move the consent agenda? Seeing none, motion passes. We are down to item 8, action items. A-13007, AASB resolutions. Is there a motion to move this item?
I like move 13-007 ASB resolutions.
Is there a second?
Yes, I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Cordero, seconded by Member Lacey. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Please come forward, and you will have 3 minutes.
Hello, thank you. My name is Debbie Rutherford.
Yes. Last meeting, there was some discussion that concerned me about this item, and especially having to do with the assessment of students outside the school system. I believe strongly that outside of the monies available to enforce, that this is a that this is a resolution we should support. At least we should not go on record as not supporting it. And I believe this for three reasons. I believe that, first, I think we owe it to society to children are brought into the public system often after they have been kept out of it for a while, and they're behind. And this costs all of us money. I mean, you could argue that this is an infringement on a person's private business, but I would argue that public education of our nation's next generation is really public business. And I think it's important that we ensure these students are receiving an adequate education. Secondly, we owe it to the students themselves. I mean, we pride ourselves in this district on treating all students equally. I completely applaud the comment made in the participation in interscholastic activities, and I've heard it repeated many times here at this board. All students receiving funding for public education should be considered public education students, regardless of being in alternative delivery programs or traditional programs. And I would argue that that's whether or not they're receiving funding for public education. All students are public education students, and we're responsible for all of them. If I had chosen, third, I want to say, if I had chosen homeschooling as an option for my family, I would be proud of the education I was giving my student, and I would hope that I would be perfectly willing to have it periodically assessed or confirmed to confirm the achievements that we were reaching at home. Why wouldn't I be? And I just think that's a very important question to think about. Why wouldn't I be willing to show you how well we're doing? Do we really want to go back to a point, really over a century ago, where we weren't concerned that every single child got a quality education? I just don't think that's the right message we want to send. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Thank you.
So I think what we're going to be doing is taking each of these items on their face, having a discussion. These are pulled, which means, and correct me if I'm wrong, members of the board, all the other items that were within the packet, essentially we pass on to ASB as they were. These items we take out, we discuss, and then we'll vote on them individually, correct? Any different view on how we're doing things? Okay. So with that, we have a motion on the table, and it consists of all of the resolutions that were pulled. First one being B11, increase in family and parental involvement in schools and educational programs. And it states there's some administrative comments. Relationships with parents and schools need to be culturally responsive and proactive in order to support the highest levels of achievement for students. This language strengthens the resolution by going beyond initiating contact with parents and emphasizes engaging parents in the education of their children. Member Cordero.
I actually pressed to speak before we started going through
them.
Sorry. No, it's okay. This is kind of a weird system. But one of my concerns, and this is something I observed last year, is that there are so many resolutions that I think AASB has been more effective when a proposal like funding for the busing, everyone came together and supported that versus having so many that you just cannot efficiently advocate for the ones that are more meaningful or that at least you have a better chance of advocating for with the legislature. So for me, having so many with so many things, and I realize that some schools in rural Alaska have different priorities than ours, I would just concentrate on maybe top five that we know we could possibly get and then move on to the next ones versus submitting several dozens of these resolutions. But that's just my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions on this particular resolution? Any comments? Member Welton.
I understand Member Cordero's concerns of what happens is that the ones that are most important do filter to the top, and they filter to the top through all the discussions and the discussions that we actually have at the AASB meeting in November. That's where they come through. I, too, believe that there's way too many to just say, well, we support all of these or we support only, 49 out of 50 or something like that. But I think that it's part of the process is the discussions that we have. As far as B11, B11 is a belief statement, and I believe it was one that was changed as part of the beliefs, and I would like to support the changes, the emphasis engaging parents in the education of their children. I would like to say that I support that.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on this particular item? So if we vote yes in the affirmative, then this means that we support this resolution and we move it on the ASB. So seeing no questions or comments, let's vote on this item. A motion passes with six votes, and once again, Member Larson is absent. So this takes us down to the next item, B13, Prevention Early Intervention. Again, here there are some administration comments. Students who are at risk for dropping out of school can be identified using known risk factors early in their school careers. Supports for students including providing academic interventions, partnering with parents on the importance of attendance, and partnering with outside agencies for mental health and social services. This also is a belief statement. Any questions or comments on this item? Seeing none, let's vote. Again, this item passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to B17, Early Childhood Education. Administration comments. Districts, in partnership with Head Start, work with parents at the beginning of a child's educational career. These partnerships focus on successful transitioning into kindergarten. Students with developmental and language delays benefit from high-quality early childhood programs. MATSU, children at risk for school failure when provided early childhood programs show increased performance at the end of their kindergarten year. Any questions or comments on this item? It's a belief statement, so let's vote, please. This motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us over to 1.4, Maintaining Local Control in Charter Schools Formation. Administration comments. Currently, all Alaska school charters are authorized through state school districts. However, in other states and the District of Columbia, charters may be provided via university or city or state government. In Alaska statute, teachers remain district staff and fall under the laws and regulations of the state government and its local policy. The teachers then remain a part of the district's collective bargaining group. There exists some thought that charters could be more innovative in experimenting with public education, as the federal language suggests, if they were not tied to a local school district. An alternative view is that education should be solely nonprofit, and granting statewide or university charters may bring for-profit charter schools to Alaska. The administration has brought this issue to the charter school representatives, principals, and some APC chairs to discuss. It was asked by a board member that the questions go to the APC board at each charter school this fall for input as well. So once again, this is 1.4, maintaining local charter school, local control in charter schools formation. So if we vote, it's a vote in the affirmative means we want charter schools to remain under the control of school districts as opposed to being alternatively authorized. Any questions or comments? We have Member Welton.
I would like some clarification. We talked at one time about there being maybe this was just a discussion that we were having about charter schools. We talked about there being a possibility of a school board or something like that would be the administrative piece and it, take it out of the district's hand, our district hand, or something like that. And I just need some clarification as to what do you think AASB is saying? What do you think the state is saying? And anybody can answer, you know, what you think is, you know, whether, if the administration has any opinion on that.
Well, I can let Dr. Perlmutter speak to the administration's view of this. But again, I think a vote in the affirmative means that we want the school district, a school board wants control to remain under the school board itself. The administrative comments allude to the fact that there are other states that have what they refer to as alternative authorizers, in which they're authorized by other agencies. They could be nonprofits, and in some states there's for-profit. I think what we were talking about, Vice President Walton, also was there's some inconsistencies. There's some issues embedded within the state charter school law that we have now. For example, principals are hired by the APC. There's an issue of evaluation and supervision. There's some contract issues and some insurance issues, et cetera, that I think we was brought to our attention over the past 2 or 3 years that we thought may need to be looked at. So there's two different issues. This particular resolution calls, I think, simply calls for, if we vote yes, then we're affirming that we want charter schools to stay under the control of school board, school districts. If we vote no, then we just simply vote no, and people can interpret what that vote means. Any more questions or comments?
Yeah, well, I brought up this issue at the last meeting, mainly to point out that there was a there were comments from APC board members that they were not asked about whether or not they wanted something like this to happen in their schools. And we had heard that the principals all unanimously said we want to be under the school district's control. So I just brought it up as a comment that I've heard, but that was pretty much it. So.
And through the president, today we were having a meeting with the charter school and administration. We have those periodically through the year. However, it was canceled, so I was going to bring them to that. That was on the agenda for the principals. And actually, APC chairs attend the meeting as well, and they were going to take that back to their individual schools. However, we had no power here for quite some time, so we went ahead and asked that the principals remain at their buildings because we had power outages on and off throughout the valley. So that did not happen, but I can assure you it will happen.
Any other questions or comments before we vote? So once again, a vote in the affirmative means you support this resolution. A vote negative means you do not. All right, let's vote. This, interesting. It fails. It's a tie vote. So we just... basically, where we don't, it fails. We don't support the resolution as per vote. This takes us down to item 1.5, school vouchers. Administrative comments. Administration philosophically supports public school choice per the Alaska Constitution, Section 1. Alaska public education is guided by the Alaska Supreme Court, which holds a position. Alaska restrictions independent of the U.S. Constitution bars disbursement of public funds for the purchase of private or parochial education. The legislature shall, by general law, establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children of the state and may provide for other public educational institutions. Schools and institutions so established shall be free from sectarian control. No money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or private educational institution. One of the voucher concerns is, that public money might be used for non-secular schooling. Nonetheless, as you see above in the Alaska Constitution, the wording would need to be changed to allow vouchers to be used for religious schools. In addition, voucher funding tied to students may not fully ensure students or taxpayers the benefits of accountability measures without invading the religious and other constitutional freedoms of private and parochial schools. This sunsets November 2013, this resolution. So, again, a vote in the affirmative would be that we support AASB's position that there should not be school vouchers allowed. A vote in the negative means that we don't support this. Are there any questions or comments from members of the board? Member Welton.
I will continue to support this due to religious freedom issues and issues that have to do with public monies going to religious entities. I think we forget where we come from, where there were church state issues where you paid money to the government for your church to be supported, and so you had your state church and state religion. And I believe that we are headed down that road by giving money, our public monies, to schools that may have a religious base or even a private base, because it is not something that we would have any control over. And my public dollars cannot support just anybody's religion. And I believe that we forget where we come from. Religious freedom is based on our liberty of conscience. And when we support a particular religion through giving public dollars, it takes away the rights of those who do not believe in that religion or do not wish to follow those tenets. They may respect that religion, but it is not a place you would not want to put your money toward a school that was from my particular church, I'm sure. And I just really feel that this is wrongheaded to promote vouchers. So I am in the affirmative of keeping this resolution in. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Pauser.
I have said before that I am not necessarily opposed to private schools receiving vouchers. However, when the legislature does change the Constitution, if and when they possibly do that, I'm willing to have this conversation again. But I think right now it's kind of a moot point until that's changed. So I'll be voting I'm voting to keep it in.
Any other questions or comments from members of the board? I've got a comment. Certainly, Member Welton has expressed one view that there's many views regarding vouchers. For myself, it's a choice issue for parents and kids. I don't necessarily agree that the natural extension is going to become a state religion as a result of vouchers. That's not really borne out in other states that have vouchers. But it does allow folks to have the choice as to where they want to send their children to school. And I'll be voting against this because I do believe that parents should have the right to choose where their children go to school. Any other questions or comments before we vote? So a yes is supporting this, a no is not. So let's vote, please. Again, it's a tie. I guess we can blame or thank Member Larson. When it's a tie, the motion fails. So this would be another one that would not be going down as being supported by the school board. This takes us down to 1.6, centralized treasury. Is there another board member that would like to read this to the public? Member Cordero. Member Lacey. Thank you.
1.6, centralized treasury. Distribution of allocated funds for schools and interest earned. The administration comments are, administration is in support of this resolution. Currently, the Mat-Su Borough retains all interest earnings on school district deposits. This is revenue that the school district could realize if it assumed full responsibility for managing its own cash flow. There seems to be some confusion when considering the rationale supporting this resolution. The term central treasury refers to a bank account managed by the borough, which is shared between the two governmental agencies. The central treasury allows for the borough access to the receipts deposited for district operations, thus allowing the borough to earn interest on those funds before they are fully expended. Let me move here. Meanwhile, it's actually the board ordinance that governs the fund balance policy and restricts the amount of carryover funds the district can hold on in reserve. In other words, even if the borough and the district have separate bank accounts rather than a shared central treasury, the district would still be subject to an overly restrictive fund balance ordinance imposed by the borough.
Thank you. Any comments or questions on this particular resolution? Member Lacey.
I think I've been an outspoken person that says that we need to manage our own money because I quite frankly feel that we can manage our money better than they can down the street. So that's all I need to say.
Thank you. Member Powger.
I was wondering about the interest. Anybody have any idea what that interest may be? I mean, how long are those funds there before they're expended, and what kind of interest would that be?
We control the interest, again, for the deposits we made through activities, but is Mr. Forrest able to answer that? In a given year, we know our budget is a, you know, $200 million budget, so you can imagine.
At the present time, with rates as low as they are, it would be relatively insignificant. You're probably talking well less than $100,000, even if the rates were to double. So the problem is that, of course, the state, who has the money first, hangs on to it before they send it to the district and to the borough. So we're not talking about a lot of money now, but if we can get the law changed, as Mr. Lacey says, and we can manage the money, the district would be well served to do that, because in the future we probably will have additional funds available, and the rates can't possibly stay this low forever.
Any other questions or comments from members of the board on this issue? I too would be one that supports this. I think that when money is earmarked for students, it should go, as much as the money as possible should go to the students. So with that, let's vote. This motion passes. It's unanimous.
1.8, accountability and advocacy for students outside the school system. The administration comments. As it stands, the administration advocates within the cloudy parameters of what we define advocacy to be. More specifically, our district administration would like to see every child receive a free and appropriate education that requires accountability and demonstration to demonstrate learning has occurred. However, advocacy is difficult to define globally, and it's difficult to enforce. When the state defines exactly what accountability is, how will it be measured, and how advocacy will be defined and funded, then it may rise to the level of being more than just another unfunded mandate.
Any questions or comments from members of the board on this item? Member Cordero.
So the issue, I just want to make sure that I understand. When he's talking about children, students outside of the district, are we talking about students that live within the Matsu Borough but
no.
study through a different program, or are we talking about children who are actually outside of the Matsu Borough?
No, this is a ASB resolution for statewide purposes, so it's what they're talking about is children outside of the public school system as we know it. Any other questions or comments? Member Gaddis.
So if I'm hearing correctly, does this also mean that if kids are in a Christian school or something, that we're also wanting to test them as well? Is that what the resolution is asking? Anything outside of the public school?
That would be my interpretation. If anyone has something different, please jump in.
Okay.
This would include anyone outside the public school system. If you go to, like you said, a Christian school, a Monroe Catholic, homeschool.
Okay, thank you.
So a vote of yes would support this resolution for accountability for students outside the system. A vote no would, it depends on how you interpret it, but a vote no would not send this down as something we support. Any additional questions or comments before we vote? Okay, let's vote. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This resolution fails. So this takes us down to 1.9, compulsory attendance law. Member Lacey?
Administration comments. Administration believes that the current compulsory attendance law, 7 years to 16 years old, is presently challenging to enforce. Our belief that this resolution on compulsory attendance to mandate student attendance from 6 to 18 years in theory may be a good statement. However, we continue to be challenged with the ability to enforce any attendance laws. Districts across the state, including the Mat-Su Borough District, have attempted a variety of methodologies to try and enforce compulsory attendance. Wait a second. Approximately 14 years ago, the Mat-Su Borough attempted to enforce attendance through citing truant students' families. Ultimately, the lack of judicial support, funding, and personnel limitations quickly led to the demise of this program. A significant investment from the state would be required in the form of truancy officers as well as judicial personnel who could hear the truancy cases.
Are there any questions or comments from members of the board on this item? So again, we understand that if we vote for this, we are supporting the compulsory attendance law. And I guess I do have one question. Was this the resolution that was trying to up the age, I think, to 18? Okay. And lower the age. So basically a vote of yes would mean that we support the resolution to increase the age for compulsory attendance to 18 and believe it was to 6 years of age. So if you vote yes, you support that. If you vote no, you don't. So without any further – oh, Member Cordero.
Through the President. Dr. Paramo, is there any data from other states in which they've done any similar increases to the age that show that there have been more students attending school, that they're less truancy, or do you know anything about that?
I don't have any information in regard to changing the age of it, but when they link it to financial consequences, things change.
Questions or additional questions or comments from members of the board? So again, a vote of yes supports this, a vote of no does not. Are we ready? Let's vote. 1, 2, 3, 4. This motion fails 4-2. Let's move on to the next item. Member Lacey.
2.2, urging the legislature to adjust the basic student allocation. Administration is in support of this resolution. The foundation formula is defined under AS 14-17-410 and is the only state aid for public education established in any statute. Any other state funding appropriated to the schools is done so with one-time appropriations by the legislature. The administration, therefore, is in support of funding built into the foundation formula as opposed to one-time funding outside the formula on the premise that funding, certainty, and the sustainability of programs offered by the district. Furthermore, the integrity of the foundation formula is compromised if there is no mechanism in place to account for inflation. The basic student allocation is the appropriate factor within the formula to be adjusted when considering inflationary pressures.
Thank you. Comments or questions on this item? So a vote of yes means you would support the legislature adjusting the student-based allocation. A vote of no would mean you would not support it. So let's vote. 5-1 and an absence with Member Larson. So this motion does pass, or this item does pass. So this takes us down to 2.4, grants for student improvement strategies.
Hang on just a minute. My computer did something here. No? Okay, go ahead. Where are we?
I'll go ahead and read it. Grants for student improvement strategies, administration comments. The administration is in support of this resolution. The resolution aims to provide targeted assistance to schools around the state based on low-performing criteria. The grant program would be managed by the Department of Education and Early Development. Funding for school improvement activities would be provided by the state of Alaska to assist in districts and or schools in overcoming systemic barriers to education. These funds should be used on research-based practices, that is, student interventions teacher retention programs and improving the graduation rate. By funding state-level improvement grants, the state of Alaska would be able to base awards on state priorities and criteria rather than federal priorities.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments on this item? Again, if you support this, you support the legislature securing grants. Could be through the legislature itself, additional federal grants if that were available for student improvement strategies. So a vote of yes would support this, a vote of no would not. We ready to vote? Let's vote.
Let's vote.
This is unanimous. It passes. This takes us to $2.14 million, pupil transportation.
Okay. Pupil transportation administration comments. The administration is in support of this resolution. This resolution recommends continued funding increases for pupil transportation. Currently under SB 182, there are built-in increases for FY14 and FY15 of 1.5% each year. However, these increases are well under the average year-to-year increase reflected in the Anchorage CPI-U. The significance of the Anchorage CPI-U is that it is the inflationary index represented in the district's contract with First Student.
Thank you. Any comments or questions on this item? An affirmative vote supports it. Negative does not. So let us vote. It's unanimous. This item passes. This takes us down to 3.23, student participation in interscholastic activities.
Yes. Senate Bill 119 has raised several questions. One, do students in alternative education programs face the same eligibility standards for interscholastic activities as do public students? The district would propose that the language of question one, do public school students in alternative education programs face the same eligibility standards for interscholastic activities as traditional public school students? All students receiving funding from public education should be considered public education students regardless of being in an alternative delivery programs or traditional programs. Academic progress and homeschool progress will have the equivalent participation requirements as traditional school requirements per OSAR regulations. Two, is this an unfunded mandate in that students enrolled in the alternative education programs do not qualify public school for foundation funding? Do activity fees cover the cost of student participation? Currently, the district participates in the statewide planning committee led by the OSAW director, Gary Matthews. The committee is building clarifying language that will be supported through OSAW regulations to provide equitable access for all students, traditional and alternative, so that the intent of SB 119 is followed to give fair access to all. Three, are the requirements not in 14-30-365 should be added to make it workable? Presently, the committee led by the director, Gary Matthews, feels confident that the desired effect of SB 119 can be achieved. The primary clarifying piece of the committee is seeking from the state is who will determine if a homeschool program is an accredited program. Gary Matthews reported on September 10, 2012, that the progress is being made on clarifying this point, and the state will provide language to assist current ambiguousness of the bill as it relates to accredited homeschool program.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Dr. Paramor to I think at the last meeting you had made some comments. I'm just wondering if you can just repeat those again to help clarify some of the issues here.
Thank you. I would just like to comment, as did one of our persons to be heard, that Our district feels strongly that kids who come from our district, whether they're in an alternative program, career tech high school, homeschool, if you're in an education program and receiving your funding, then you, or even home, I mean, you are a public school student. And so calling some kids this and other kids that, I think it's detrimental to our community in general. And so we actually welcome this. We're just waiting on the state to clarify. I need to let you know there's a bunch of angst around the state on this issue. However, we have two representatives, one on ASA and one on the superintendent's steering committees for these, so that Matt Sue can comment and make the transition as easy as possible. I just want you to know that actuality in our schools, we have several kids on homeschool that participate in high school sports in their high schools now. And the ideas were that some kids would be angry, they're taking their spots on the court, they're doing this and that, and really the world is flat, and through social media these kids know each other, they work with each other in the community, and we believe that they also can play with each other. And we just hope that the state defines accreditation. That really is the word that's holding everyone up about what is an accredited school. Once the state defines that, Matt Sue is ready to go.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members of the board? We have Member Welton.
Part of this is the muddiness, cloudiness of understanding the progress in a different school system, homeschooling not in the district, and what their progress is. That's the problem, is to say they have to meet so many quarters of appropriate progress and grades. And if you are homeschooling and you're working real fast in one subject but you're not working in another subject that fast, or you've put it off so that you're going to do more credits in another semester than you're doing now, you don't meet the standards. And that's part of the problem, I think, that it's hard to determine that, that the ASA regulations have been there that says you have to meet particular standards, I think.
Through the president, actually the bill states that they will follow ASA regulations. So the bill is very clear that students will have to be enrolled in full time, which is four courses, and they will have to maintain that GPA that's required. So the state law is actually very clear that says you have to follow ASA regulations. The question is, it says you can come from an accredited school, and there's many different accreditation agencies, and so that's what folks are concerned about. But students, no matter if they're in our homeschool or a statewide homeschool program, they would all have to follow ASA rules as they do now, because currently we do have homeschool students participating in sports. They're just not on teams. And so this would change it, that they can actually be part of a team. And you had referenced that issue in Chugiak last meeting.
Member Powger?
I was wondering if ASA regulation does state where a child lives, so that if the child lives in that public school boundary, if that's the school that they would be participating in sports at.
Through the president, that is correct. And just so you know, that will run contrary to how we treat our own homeschool students. Our students in any school can establish, and this is career tech as well, if they belong to any district-wide program, they can establish a home school for participation. Once that school is established, that is their home school, and then they follow the ASA regulations for transferring. The bill did say that their home school would be in the geographic location, so we will grapple with that ourselves once that comes to us. Because currently, if I went to Palmer Junior Middle School but decided to go to Career Technical High School, I could choose a school in our district to be my home school for sports because I'm a career tech student, or Matsu Central School, and I can participate there. Now, again, if I transferred, all those transfer consequences would be you can't just flip around schools, but we allow our students their ninth grade year to select their home school.
Any other questions or comments from members of the board? Member Welton?
We ran into a problem a couple of years ago also with homeschool accreditation, and it has to do with that the my understanding at the time was that the particular curriculum that the student was taking had to be identified as accredited, and that it was difficult to do that sometimes. Is that going to be an issue?
Within our district, and of course this is our district, we have teachers assigned that would review that with the parents and the students, and so our teachers are signing off. There will be some type of grade check where the responsibility is placed on people, but I want you to know that not only in homeschool, but also in any school, there's a question, even colleges, about this person gives this grade, this person gives this grade. I mean, grading practices are another thing of it in itself. So we just need to hopefully look that that accreditation and those grading situations are nice and tight, and then use those systems of protocols that we have in place to make good judgments without being judgmental. And I think we are, it's not going to be easy because it's new, but you're right, all those questions may come up.
Member Welton.
Sorry, one last one question. So in the I don't have in my packet here the actual statement of this resolution. For some reason, it was on another paper, and I don't have it. So I want to know, is it the idea that to vote for this says that we agree that we want student participation from all schools to be able to participate, and that would like remedy the situation that happened in Chukiak?
Through the president, the primary resolution really was very simple, but these three questions were what it said is we want you to clarify this. So the resolution said to clarify those three questions, which were, do students in alternative education programs face the same eligibility standards? Is this an unfunded mandate in that students enrolled in alternative education programs do not qualify for school funding, so how do we pay for it? And then finally, are there requirements not in statute that would be added? So it's basically asking for those clarifications. The theory behind this is that if you live in a district, you probably most likely live in a home that you're either paying rent on or you're paying a mortgage, and through your local contribution, you actually are providing some type of payment to public education, even though you're not a general public, even though you might not be in the school district school, so that all families are actually putting money into the pot, so to speak, and that is the theory behind it. But that was some questions about the cost. But those three items were the questions in the resolution.
Any other questions or comments on this item? So a vote yes supports this resolution. A vote no does not. Are we ready to vote? Let's vote. So this motion passes 5-1.
May I clarify, Mr. President?
Yes.
Would you like us to put our questions back in that we raised here on the paper, or just let it go?
You can, in answer to your question, you can include any information you think will be helpful for the folks viewing the resolution. So this takes us down to item 4.8, relating to secure retirement benefits.
4.8, relating to secure retirement benefits. Administration is not in support of this resolution. Matsu Borough School District has not found it difficult to recruit or retain positions, with the exception of those special education positions where national shortages exist. Additionally, many new employees are enjoying the portability of the new defined contribution system established by the state of Alaska. Lastly, while the district understands that the unfunded liability resulted from inaccurate actuality rates established by the state of Alaska, the district is appreciative of the continued commitment by the state to pay down the liability going forward. With an $11 billion unfunded liability for the PERS-TERS plans, Matsu Borough School District Administration does not know how it could be considered fiscally responsible for the state to reinstate the defined benefit system.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on this item? Member Lacey.
Yes, we need to support this. My whole problem with this thing is years ago, people who obviously failed math are the ones that ruined our defined benefit contribution system. And I, for one, think we should come back with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments or questions for members of the board? So a vote of yes would support this resolution to, Yes, to reestablish, reinstate, or create a new system, what they're referring to. So affirmative would be to support that. A negative would be to not support this resolution. So with no further questions or comments, let's vote. Two, three, four. Motion fails 4-2. This ends our session on the ASB resolutions. Let's take a 5-minute recess. This takes us down to item B under action items. 13-022 FY13 budget amendment on behalf of payments. Is there a motion to move this item?
I move 13-022 FY13 budget amendments on behalf of payment.
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Cordero, seconded by Member Lacey. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Yes, Mr. President. Previously, we had come before the board and discussed that the on behalf of payment for Matsu Borough School District, which is mentioned in some of our AASB resolutions, increased from, we had a placeholder in there of $26 million, and it actually increased to about $36 million, about $10 million over the year, from one year to the next. And again, it's our state is doing, making great gains and taking care of the people that they had promised these retirements to. So I applaud our state. It's only one in four that do that. So we brought back that amendment, but in the start of the school year, some other issues also have arisen, which I alluded to in my superintendent's update. And they are in regard to enrollment, which we fall significantly behind in FTE than anticipated. In addition, we're going to make some comments in here why the other resolution that passed in regard to multi-year funding will help us better plan and know the amount of funds in this base student allocation. So with that, these actually tie into many of your resolutions. Mr. Forrest.
Good evening. Just a slight review as we get started. When we did the original budget presentation, we mentioned to the board that the general fund is far from healthy, hence Dr. Paramo's comment about multi-year funding, or forward funding as it is referred to in the state of Alaska. The problem that we have is that in future years we have expenses which right now we do not have a revenue source for. So this chart shows you part of the historical problem and the same problem going forward. If you include, as is indicated here in this top projection here, if you include the SERP, you can see that we were still behind with average funding increasing 2.62, and we dropped to only 5.29 for our increase in expenditures. When you take the SERP out, which we wouldn't do, had we not done the SERP, it would have been 6.39. So referring to this top one, we continue to see a problem of an average increase of only 2.62 in revenue, with our average cost for just employee compensation going up 5.29. That, of course, is unsustainable and is referred to as a structural deficit. In addition to that, we were very fortunate due to the lobbying efforts that were put forth from the legislature. And we have some one-time monies, in addition to some other one-time funds, as we categorize them. So we had the governor's energy money this year, which is not assured next year. We had the one time, we believe, zero increase for health insurance. We have Air Force ROTC, Alaska Middle College, STEM, and the cyber centers. That totals a little over $8 million, or roughly the equivalent of 80 FTE. Should we not have the savings in health insurance, or should we not receive funding from the state, you can see that we would have 80 positions which would have to be eliminated. So getting back to where we stand, this is the adopted budget presentation which you approved previously, and you can see right in this kind of yellow-gray line where we had $26 million right here as the OBO. Upon submission to the state, they informed us that we had incorrectly done that calculation, and we now have an updated number. So, showing the adopted budget in the left column, and then the right column is the new OBO. In addition, since we have talked to you last time, the auditors have reclassified the student allotments for Mat-Su Central, which used to be transferred to a separate fund. They have reclassified them and said they will no longer allow us to do that. And so those funds are now part of the general fund. So we had to make some adjustments up here in non-projected costs. In addition to that, with the new MUNIS system, we've been able to more accurately forecast salaries and benefits. So this amended budget reflects the new OBO and the new adjustments in these other categories. Yes, sir.
Question. With regard to the allotments, it's reabsorbed back into the general fund. After the fiscal year, can that be broken back out?
The auditor was, I would say, kind and generous. After making this decision, they allowed us to move some of those funds into the CIP. So some of the expenditures which Mat-Su Central had already made for capital items are being covered out of the CIP this year.
So if the board in the future wanted the allotments to carry over a fiscal year in an effort to, however you want to word it, support what is happening at Mat-Su Central, is what I'm hearing that the auditors are saying we cannot do that?
That's correct. We have a solution at the end of this
Okay,
slide.
Thank you.
So this is what we're asking the board to adopt tonight, and there's one other change which has to be made. This is what you adopted with regard to pupil transportation, and as Dr. Paramo has indicated, while we still have a significant number of students coming to our doors every day, the FTE is below projection. This will require that utilization of the entire transportation ending fund balance plus a subsidy as shown on this slide of $39,098. So we also need to amend the transportation budget due to a change in how this is allocated. So what we're asking the board to approve tonight is this resolution, which basically says here are, this was the old information in the gray and black, and these are the new numbers. And by doing that, we will correctly reflect the new changes for the OBO and those minor changes in salaries and benefits. We will then send an updated report to DEED, which is very close to completion now, but of course we had to wait for your approval. So we have more in the presentation, or you can act on the resolution now and then I can continue the presentation. It's your call.
Questions or comments from members of the board? Member Lacey.
Yes, on a kind of a related matter, all the summer I haven't been able to get some of the financial data that you guys haven't given it to us like you did last year. I read this a lot and I use it for insomnia sometimes, but it's really informative. Can we get that again?
That was a test to determine if you were actually looking for it. You passed. Thank you very much. Well, actually, as you may recall, we've stated we've had difficulty with MUNIS. So the answer to your question is absolutely. Those will start coming now. Once this budget is completed, we have just two more steps to go, basically. Once the board adopts this, then we'll make a change, which I'll show you on a further slide, and then we will adjust the budget to reflect these changes, and then we can appropriately send you this amended budget. So, yes, sir, you will be receiving those, your budget transfers, and the other items you were receiving.
And through the president, also, I'd just like to say that the work that was the focus to start of this school year wasn't necessarily to amend this budget. It was to get the kids in school and to make it through our first major payroll. And we significantly were successful on that by having less than 10 errors. So we really focused on that August 31st payroll.
So. Member Gaddis.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment. Could we see the whole presentation and then go back and vote on the resolution so then we kind of know what the outcomes might be?
Sure. Yes. Does the board have an issue with that?
Okay. So as Dr. Paramo mentioned, the student count is coming in lower than projected. And so this is student departures from June through, actually the report was produced this morning. So we've actually had 182 students leave the district for the following reasons. And that, of course, has a significant impact on our revenue. This next slide, I'll walk you through this slide, shows you...
Sure.
I can spend some time. There actually are pretty strict codes when a student who should be here, who was enrolled previously, doesn't show up. The top two are really undetermined, so they go to a default code. Discontinued schooling is truly the dropout where you have no idea. You haven't made contact with anyone or received any information where that child is. What we do is our school counselors call each family, and then the principal would have to sign off on each of those. The summer no drop records are similar. They are students that rolled over on our record from last year to this year that we do not know where they are. Please know that 18 and 29 are going, so about 50 students are going to be investigated, and we're going to do some query into that. The others are actually codes in which we knew because we received transfer paperwork. And as you know, the lion's share of the kids either moved out of state or moved to another district.
Member Gaddis.
On those first two, is it possible, we don't need the names, but could we get a report on why that they left, why they dropped out? What I'm hearing you say is that we'll do our utmost to try to figure out why they dropped out and... you know, those 50-some-odd, just kind of see what the trend is or where they went.
Correct. And technically, so far they may not have dropped out. We have to look. They were just defaulted to that code. But we do an exit survey in every school, and we can certainly do a report for the board on reasons that. But it is in our protocol that every student that was on our enrollment and then leaves is investigated, and that was established. And we've made some pretty significant gains in our dropout because of it.
And then we'll get a report.
Sure. We can put it in the Board Connect for you.
Any other questions?
This next slide, we're going to give you an FTE comparison. And FTE is full-time equivalent. That is the number which is utilized when we go to the funding formula. So we start off with where were we two fiscal years ago. And this line shows you that the official count was 16,962.5 FTE for students 2 years ago. Then last year, the official count came in at 17,344.1 FTE. We projected this top green line of 17,535. So we have 2 years ago, last year, and then what we projected for this year. Unfortunately, the current FTE count is the red line. And the red line shows you that actually we are below the number of students that we had last year as of the count. And the note indicates that it's been 12 years since this district went down in FTE count. And it was actually 12 years before that, the last time that happened. So Unfortunately, we look like we have a 12-year cycle here. If you look at the numbers on the left, which have just been added, you can see that last year, or 2 years ago to last year, we grew 371.6 FTE, almost the equivalent of an elementary school. If you look, our projection was 190.9, so roughly half of the previous year. So it seemed conservative at the time that if you've been growing an elementary school a year, if you're slowing down, that you would slow down at about half. As you can see, that did not turn out to be true. So we are 69 students lower as from last year, as of yesterday, and 260 FTE below our projected count.
So if the math, we had about 180 some odd students who left last year, but we're only 69 under. So we did get new students to the district. It's just that the inflow and outflow caused us to continue to be under students.
So what does that mean for the budget? Well, a couple things. One, the amended budget is in the left-hand column, which you just adopted. If you look at the right-hand column, this would be the impact should we have to reduce down by the equivalent of this roughly 260 below projection. And obviously that is still a projection. The count does not start till October, and we won't really have an official count till mid-November that we'll feel comfortable with. So you can see the changes, but basically the personnel costs remain somewhat fixed, and we are reducing the non-personnel costs to make up the difference. And you can see that that's dramatic. So how did we do this, or how would we anticipate doing this? First, all reserves have been eliminated. If I go back, I can show you that the ending fund balance goes to zero. So we would utilize our now projected ending fund balance of $1,699,886. So after lapse to the borough, this is what you'll probably be seeing when the audit is presented to you about mid-year, mid-fiscal year, December, January. All school budgets.
Mr. Forrest,
yes, sir.
Quick question. Going back to this slide, if the projection is less students, why is our fund balance higher than the originally projected budget?
This beginning fund balance that's shown here is at the end of this fiscal year. And so it was the difference between revenue and expenditure for, not this one, I'm sorry, not FY13, FY12, the year that ended in June. The year that ended in June. All non-school budgets have been dramatically reduced. So as I mentioned when we the last board meeting that we are taking steps to address any shortfalls, that means that areas outside of schools have been reduced, and dramatically. We've initiated a true hiring freeze for all but the positions you see here are basically, to sum it up, positions directly supporting students. Travel restrictions are being implemented, and we are closely monitoring substitute usage in the general fund. Grant substitute usage obviously does not have an impact on this budget.
Can you give an example of the non-school budgets that have been dramatically reduced?
Through the president, sorry. The non-school budgets are budgets that are at this district office for schools. So we we're on a six-year cycle for textbooks adoptions. We had $750,000 in there to support if the teaching group reviews that would be what we would need to do. We only left $250,000 in there, and that will cover our consumables that we already use. Each year, primary children, the difference between consumables and a textbook, they actually write in their notebooks, so you have to buy new ones. So we ensured that funds would remain in the textbook account that could cover for purchasing textbooks
for the beginning of next year, because again, because of the lapse to the borough, we cannot encumber money. We actually have to purchase it and receive it by June 30th. So it has to be in this year's budget in order to have it ready for next year to ensure that it's there the first day of school. In addition, we had some, the other significant piece was in career and technical education for supplies and materials and renewing equipment in schools. We did a major renewal last year with the influx of money from the state, and so what we did was just slow that down a bit and put those monies back into the general fund to cover salaries. So they were money that is actually used in the schools, but it originates from the department. If that makes sense to you. Yeah. Oh, and then in, IT was our information technology. It was in our contract supplies, different things like that. We really narrowed that, and we are going to work a little better at helping ourselves than calling for help all the time.
Yeah. And in addition, I want to remind the board that the entire ending fund balance would be projected to be expended, so you'd have zero. And we'll talk a little bit more about fund balance in a minute. Other questions? Yes.
Can you give an example of the sub-usage that has been restricted?
Each teacher and employee, rather, is given, of course, a sick leave, and so that's not restricted, and personal leave, that's contracted. The substitute usage would be for additional subs. When there's large functions that go on, testing, different things like that, we pull in additional help. We're just going to have to find ways within schools and really the administration and offices to find ways to better facilitate prepping for those assessments and things like that. But it would not be for classrooms.
This chart has some interesting information in it. And, Mr. Cordero, I know that you want to see how much money we're always putting towards instruction. 79% of the audited expenditures for FY12 were for instruction. So when you receive the CAFR, you'll see that 79%. That was with a budget that was very similar to what we're projecting with the amended budget of 75.3. So what you're seeing is as additional dollars became available last year, they were devoted to instructional purposes within the general fund. And obviously that's the business we're in, and that's the effort that's being made. That's a very high percentage. But what does this chart show you? It's just a comparison to give you an idea of just how much of our budget is for compensation. The audited numbers for FY10-11 were 85.26, FY11-12, 85.06. The adopted budget, we obviously were starting to show the impact of the SERP as we were drawing down on positions. It was 82.41. As we actually recalculated the numbers, it's back up to 83.07. If we have to reduce the non-compensation areas to balance the budget, you'll see it climbs back up to 84.08%. So these are high numbers, making it difficult for the district to adjust without funding, and especially with no fund balance. Let's talk about fund balance. If we had been able to have a fund balance, we would have been presenting the board with the results or preliminary fiscal results at the end of June and indicating to you what we felt was appropriate to put into fund balance and what was appropriate to move to a capital improvements program. Knowing it might have been a tough year, you probably would not have seen much money going to capital improvements program. The GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association, has recommended guidelines for fund balance for governmental institutions and K-12 institutions. Their recommendation for a district of this size is roughly $20 million, which is right in line with the state statute that says 10% of projected expenditures. State statute is very clear. You may have up to 10% of your projected expenditures in a fund balance. Had we had even a $5 million fund balance,
we would have been able to smooth the impact of these students not coming to our doors. So it's critical that we work again with the borough, with our elected legislators, to change the thinking and the law so that this school district, and hopefully districts statewide, can maintain an adequate fund balance. So this is a high priority effort, and in November, we'll be bringing to the board a fund balance policy for you to adopt. We will then move that to the borough assembly and ask for an ordinance to be passed to match the state law in lieu of what's there, and at the same time ask that the ordinance allow for encumbrances so there would not be a year-end spending crunch.
This is really only an issue for municipalities. In other words, REAs don't have this issue.
Yes, sir. That's correct. And Representative Fagy did have legislation last year which would have solved this problem. Any questions? We would like you to pass the resolution adopting the amended budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments? So we have a motion on the floor. We've asked for public comment. We've had a staff report. No questions, no comments. We're ready to vote. Okay, let's vote. The results are that it passes with a vote of 5, with 1 abstention and 1 absence. This takes us to, this takes us to item C, 13023 board self-evaluation. The board will review the ASB board self-evaluation. Is there a motion to move this item?
I would like to make a motion to move this item.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report where we are currently with the evaluation process?
Mr. President, all the evaluations have been received from those board members who are present today. Mr. Larson has let us know that he will forward his, and we will have a complete tally of the evaluation for the board to review and or provide a facilitator to do that in a work session.
Okay, so I think currently we the information just came in right before the board meeting, so currently we want to review that information before we act upon it. I believe that's the feeling of the board. Okay, so this item is on the floor. How do we wish to address it for this meeting? Member Powger.
I just did want to bring up that most people turned in their board self-evaluation at the very beginning of this meeting, so I don't think the board's ready to discuss this since we haven't read each other's comments or looked at other people's board evaluations, so I would rather put this into the future.
So there's a I'm assuming this is a request to table this for the next meeting. Member Welton.
While I would very much like to be able to just review this and move on so that we have some direction and that the board members who are present who have completed the self-evaluation would all be in attendance, I do understand that people don't want to be blindsided by anything that was said. It's just that we require our principals and our teachers to be evaluated, and our superintendent and all of our administrative staff. And yet we have put off, this is the second year, that we have not, you know, fully done a good evaluation of how we work together and where we could improve. And, you know, we can put it off because nobody wants to be blindsided, but this was brought up in August, and it kept getting shuffled aside. So I just want to make sure that it does happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? So we have a motion on the floor. Member Cordero.
So I guess the question is, we have, we've submitted our evaluations. We all talked about the things that need improvement or don't need improvement. So what exactly is it that we're voting on?
What we're voting on is to actually accept the results of the board evaluation and the goals that would come out of that is to accept it. And sometimes in the process, it's not just a cut and dried, here are the results, because sometimes we talk about the things and realize that, oh, that's what that question meant, and that's not the way I answered it. In fact, there's one question in the evaluation that most of us probably weren't able to answer because we didn't understand it.
Member Gaddis.
If I understand correctly, we don't have the results, so we really don't have anything to discuss, do we?
Well, we have the results, but they just came in right before the meeting.
I understand.
And I personally, I think others, I could be wrong, would prefer to see the results and then have potentially a work session to discuss to make sure that we are clear on what the results are, and then go ahead and move to accept the evaluation. So, but we have a motion on the floor. We didn't need to table it, kill it, vote on it. We need to act on the motion. So is there a move, an amendment to table this item to the next meeting? Member Cordero?
I move to table this item until the next meeting when we have a time to review the results.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any dissent, folks that want to speak other than who've already spoken on this item? So with that, we'll table the item, we'll move on, and at the next meeting we'll have that information and act on it. Next item is item D, 13-024, resolution 13002, library grant funding. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to move 13-024, resolution 13-002, library grant funding.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Please come forward. State your name for the record.
My name is Robin Turk. I'm the librarian at Colony Middle School, and I am the current past president of the State Association of School Librarians. And so I have a brief statement sort of explaining the motion you have before you. I'd like to thank Member Posier for bringing the resolution forward to the board for consideration. The School Library Collection Development Grant legislation was passed by the legislature in 2008. Providing a grant of $3,000 for library materials to school librarians across the state. The law states that the state library will manage the grant and the Department of Education regulations are in place. However, this law has yet to receive funding through the state library budget process. I spoke with a number of school board members at the state school board conference last year who suggested that AASB can help to get this law funded by making it a legislative priority for AASB. This year, the School Library Association will be working toward a direct appropriation for grant funding the grant, and hopefully with the support of AASB and other statewide education and library associations, we will be successful. I know from personal and professional experience that reading is a key to literacy and academic achievement. As education budgets across the state shrink, this is a way to provide support for development of the most fundamental skill we can teach, reading. Please support this resolution requesting full funding for the Public School Library Collection Development Grant Program and recommend this as a legislative priority to the Alaska Association of School Boards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Push the red button.
It's on.
Oh, it's on. Right. Yeah.
I'm Wendy Stout. I am the librarian at Larson Halftime. I just want to piggyback on what Robin said. Reading is our most fundamental skill that we teach, and research after research after research has showed that schools with newer collections that are fully funded have higher test scores. Let's see. Student achievement is higher in schools with larger collections of both traditional print books and online media sources. Stephen Krashen, who's a major proponent of the value of reading, said, when children read for pleasure and they get hooked on books, they acquire involuntary and without conscious effort nearly all of the so-called language skills many people are so concerned about. They will become adequate readers, acquire a large vocabulary, develop the ability to understand and use complex grammatical constructions, develop good writing skill, and become good but not perfect spellers. These grants from the state will put on top of what we already budget our libraries for would be huge in developing good libraries that are up to date and current for our readers to make them want to read. Currently, we just need more money for those books because they just keep coming out. So please consider to support our resolution to get this fully funded through the state of Alaska. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other members from the public would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Through the President, the before you is a resolution to go to AASB to create a resolution. So you have, from this document, if you did pass it, administration would, in conjunction with our librarians, actually write the full resolution and add to it so that it could be adopted at AASB. So this would be essentially added to the list that you earlier voted on.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the board? Member Lacey.
I think we should support this as fast as we can. But in the bigger sense, can we use any of that CIP money that we've been padding that account with for libraries for some extra books there?
Oh, I'd have to look at the list that was passed, but CIP money is certainly available for libraries. At this point in time, we'd have to bring it back to the auditor had certified the different functions, but we can place library books into CIP lists, yes.
Can you put that on as a future item to discuss the ability to transfer that money into an item such as this? Okay. Any questions or comments from the board pertaining to this particular item before us? Seeing none, let's vote. A yes supports it, no does not. Vote is yes, it's unanimous. Next item takes us to non-action items. 13-010, first reading, BP, 5126, awards for achievement. Staff?
Yes, this is just some clerical fixing in our policies because we the board has approved more than 21 credits for graduation. And so as we look to the future and those changing, we're going to change the minimum requirements to met graduation criteria.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the board? Seeing none, this will come up at our next meeting for action. Thank you. This takes us down to our work session. Item 10, due process and student expulsion. Dr. Paramo?
Yes, at the last meeting, there was a request to provide some information on due process, and I request that Matt Tieford and Gene Stone come to the podium. They're going to present information on due process both for students as well as for staff, as our board policy for Mat-Su Borough School District addresses employees as well as students. And with that, there'll be a brief introduction by Gene Stone, and Mr. Tiefer can follow up with the exact policy and answer questions. And then we'll discuss a flow chart that was designed for protocols. Thank you.
Good evening, Board. Speaking to our student discipline and due process, specifically what I want to refer folks to is the document in your packet, Board Policy 5144.1. It speaks to short-term suspension as well as long-term suspension and expulsion. Within our district, it's our district's responsibility to make sure that within those guidelines that due process is followed before any kind of recommendation for an expulsion goes on to the school board. Once a recommendation for an expulsion does go to the school board, it is the school board then makes sure that the due process has been followed. And if there's any questions in there, it would ask that the district provide evidence that due process was exercised. As far as the a couple weeks ago at the board meeting, it was my understanding, I wasn't here, but there was some missteps on the district's part. Once it moved, there was an actual expulsion, it moved to a request for readmission. Excuse me, for a readmission.
We're just going to take a 3-minute recess.
Listening to the Radio Free Farmer stream of the school board meeting on September 19th. We're taking a quick 3-minute recess in the midst of a discussion of policies regarding due process and expulsion. So we will come back to the meeting in just a few moments.
Back to administration. You're good now.
Yeah, so where I ended was on 5144.1, and so no expulsion is approved without going to the board and board approval. And so just wanted to talk about readmission. When there's an expulsion and a student applies for readmission, basically as a district, what we just wanted to share with the board was that we had established a protocol, essentially a template for how the administration would demonstrate what their function was, what the parent and the student's function was, and then what the board's function would be. And I guess the next piece of that is that Matt Tiefer would speak specifically to what due process is, and within the legal parameters, and how that would apply to schools and the law, and then also due process and complaint processes. So Matt would speak to that.
So the board has a memo I prepared. I guess I'll just walk you real briefly through the procedure. There's procedure at the school level. Every suspension, no matter how short, demands some sort of due process. And the reason for that is that the United States Supreme Court has determined that students have a property interest and a liberty interest, that is due process interest in education. So our policy, the one Mr. Stone referred to, has the procedures that meet those due process standards when it comes to short-term suspensions at the school level. The longer-term suspensions come through district office, and there's a hearing process also defined in that policy that defines the parameters, again, consistent with the due process requirements for the student and his or her representative to present their case, if you will, in the face of a long-term suspension, again, to protect those property interests in education. And then finally, at the expulsion stage, as Mr. Stone mentioned, the board has exclusive authority to and approve a recommendation by the administration for expulsion or not to approve it. And so those are the procedures when it comes to what the district provides for due process in student suspension and expulsion cases. And my review of the case law is that these are more than consistent with and appropriate for protecting those interests of students. As Mr. Stone also referenced, when it comes to readmission of a student who's been expelled already, it's not so much a due process inquiry, because presumably due process requirements, if we follow these procedures, have been met. And so what the board in that instance is doing is looking at the evidence, if you will, that the student and his or her parent or representative provides to the board to show and try to convince the board that he or she is a successful can be a successful candidate for readmission. So the way I look at it at that stage, it's really the burden of the student to show why he or she should reassume those interests in education that have been taken by the board, but consistent with due process procedures. So if there, before I move to the conflict resolution procedure, if there...
First of all, I apologize. My laptop is in IT, so I don't actually have the policy in front of me. But in regards to an expulsion, at the school level, when parents get an opportunity to appeal that, if they decide not to appeal, do they have to send anything in writing saying, no, I do not want to appeal? Or is it just automatic by default that they don't show and it's just we assume that they just don't want to appeal?
Well, what happens is the school principal or assistant principal sends home and is required to send home a written communication to the parent that informs them of their appeal rights. And so they would have, I believe it's 5 days to exercise those rights. If they don't, the presumption is that they decided not to exercise those rights and the suspension would proceed.
And since this is a work session, and this is one of my concerns, is that a lot of parents, their first, probably not the right word, but their first knee-jerk reaction would be, what did you do? And, you know, you're in trouble, and I'm not even going to bother filling out that form. And yet, information may be available later on in which they think, you know what, maybe I should have filed for an appeal, and now all of a sudden my 5 days are over. I think it would be prudent, and again, I don't have my laptop with me, so I don't know, that maybe parents should sign off saying, I do not wish to appeal. But...
Member Lacey.
Yes, it says on the bottom of this document I'm looking at, it says the proposed suspension for less than 10 days, the student must at a minimum receive a note of administrator's reasons for the suspension and an opportunity to respond. I guess my point is, what is involved in the opportunity to respond? And let's say that Sarah here is my daughter, she gets in trouble. I want some due process. If it's less than 10 days, is there a due process?
Okay, well, there are, I think, three steps for, I think what you're speaking to is a suspension of less than 10 days. And the process there is the, and this is directly addressed by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case called Goss v. Lopez. And there the question was, were the procedures that school district had in place consistent with due process requirements? So the issue of what's required for 10 days or less suspension is pretty clearly addressed in that case. And what they said was that at a minimum, okay, the student needs an opportunity to respond to the allegations and needs to have a particular notice, either verbally or in writing, of what those allegations underpinning the recommendation for suspension are. I'm not aware of a requirement, and it may have been construed in later cases, but not a requirement in that case itself, where the parent has a right to come in and further participate in the appeal. We, however, as a school district, go beyond the minimum that's required, and at step two of that short-term suspension process, provide an opportunity for parents to participate in what's called a meeting with the school administrator. And so, again, I think there's the minimum threshold, and that's the Supreme Court standard, and then what we provide. And in my view, we provide more than what's required.
Yes. Now, let's say that I feel that my daughter has been unfairly treated, and I don't want her to get a 10-day suspension because it looks bad on her transcripts. At what point do I have to get a hearing in front of the board, if you will, to make this go away or to get my satisfaction out of it?
Yeah, it's still short term. When it comes beyond 10 days is when you get the more comprehensive procedures. And that's when, if it's 10 days or more, that the parent would have that appeal right that they're noticed about in a letter from the school. And if they exercise that right, they get to request a hearing with rather formalized procedures, an independent hearing officer and so forth, the right to have counsel before that long-term suspension is approved.
Your short-term suspensions basically lay with the school.
Correct.
That's standard, I think, across the nation because of the Supreme Court law.
That's right.
Anything above that is long-term suspension. A different set, a different criteria kicks in.
That's right.
And then as it moves up, it's headed towards the board.
Right.
Okay.
I just want to be real clear in the long term, and really what I'm getting to is, when does the parent know that they really should get involved and that they have an opportunity to get involved? I mean, do we write them a letter? Do we email them? I think that's where my concern would be is, what do they know, or the opportunity that they know that they can get involved? And I think they should. Without, you know, discussing executive session, I think too many times we don't see parents. So I'm wondering why.
I'm going to defer to Dr. Paramo. She can probably speak to the practice among principals better than I.
There actually is a letter that is somewhat a form letter, so to be sure that we have all those areas for which we need to inform parents. But we also, in that letter, is the actual incident and the evidence and whatnot. But specifically, when a person is notified of a long-term suspension, there's a conversation with the parent. The parent, you know, comes in or over the phone. Also, they are given a return receipt letter, so that the receipt, when they sign for that letter and pick it up, is when they understand that what the rights are. So they are written, but I haven't experienced a principal who didn't carefully contemplate a 10-day suspension, that didn't call the district office, have multiple conversations with children, because this is most of those are presumptive sanctions that are already written into board policy. So they call for long-term suspensions. So within our school board policy, we call for presumptive sanctions that call for 10 days. So they review the evidence, contact the parent. Sometimes the child has to be picked up. But that return receipt specifically says you have due process rights. These are your rights. If you can call your principal to let them know you plan on appealing. All they need to do is give notice in appealing the suspension, and you know, if they're busy that next day or the next day, they don't necessarily have to come in. It's basically given notice in writing that they plan to appeal, and then we, you know, move to that next level. But as far as when parents get involved, I mean, I'm sure parents are involved from the moment their kids are born, that they should be involved in knowing these things. Each year, all those presumptive sanctions are signed by students that they received them, signed by parents that they received them. So they're available on the internet. All these things are published. But the practice is, for a long-term suspension, it's not taken lightly.
Member Lacey.
Yes, at least when I was teaching here, we had the doctrine of progressive discipline. So at least with me, if a child was acting up, I talked to him about my expectations. And when it got worse, then I called the parents and made sure that the parents were available and there. And I can't imagine a principal not following this process. I mean, it's like going to court. So that's all I want to say.
Member Powger.
Yes, I was wondering, I'm hoping, and I don't think this happens a whole lot, so I know that many of our newer principals and probably some of our older principals need to go over how we do this investigation, all of the steps. I was wondering, do we train principals on an annual basis? How often do they go over how to do these suspensions?
There isn't a set time, but there is periodic training, especially in methods of over 10 days, because that is absolutely has to be to the law, to the ticket, because of the court cases. We do have principal mentoring. So as far as every principal, every time, we have principal mentoring. They call each other, and, of course, they're supervisors. And so part of a training program is to understand how to do this. So support is there. Training is there as far as how many times a year. It's really differentiated between those short-term and long-term principals that need that support.
Mr. President.
Member Cordero.
Dr. Paramo, is there a reason why, is there a legal reason why there are only 5 days limitation to file an appeal, or is it just a neutral number that was picked?
I'm not aware of any legal foundation for that. Nor am I aware of the history of the policy to know why that date, that amount of time was chosen.
So legally, I mean, there's no reason why it couldn't be 10 or 15, so to speak.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there might be practical considerations, but. So if there aren't any questions about that, any more questions about that aspect of my memo, the second portion, letter B deals with, number two deals with the conflict resolution procedure that really is this board's procedure for dealing with complaints by the public. And it derives from board policy 1312.1. And then the procedures for that are set out in AR 1312.1. And, I speak about it in the memo. Sort of a couple takeaway points. One is with regard to due process. Although parents have a clear fundamental right of directing the education of their children, those rights deal with other areas such as, whether to homeschool children and so forth, that the state doesn't have sufficient interest in, so says the Supreme Court, to excessively interfere with the exercise of those rights. In my view, that right does not extend to complaining about district personnel. So, while this board has clearly and without, very clearly stated, has an interest in providing a procedure for parents and community members to file complaints and for there to be investigation and so forth, those complaint rights don't derive from due process principles. So when it comes to what process is owed for that complaint procedure, it's not the same sort of inquiry that you would have with an employee who has an interest in continued employment or, as we've just talked about, a student who has an interest in continuing his or her schooling. Having said that, there may be, and I reference this in the memo, there may be instances during the course of investigation, keeping in mind that these are complaints about district personnel, where the employee's rights, due process rights, are implicated. And so the board will want to be mindful when it's hearing at the appeal stage in this process, which is late in the stages, and perhaps seek advice from district legal counsel, about what that employee has been accused of misconduct or whatever the parent has accused them of, what his or her rights may be, keeping in mind they have these due process rights and continued employment. So that's kind of in a nutshell, the due process concern there, not so much the parent right to complain, but the employee's right of continued employment. Okay. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
So this takes us down to future items, business. I've got one, and then I'll turn it over to the board. I think in the future, the board, through the administration, should be working with the policy committee and with the Matthews Central School Policy Committee on cleaning up or clarifying any policy discrepancies that there are. And I think the sooner that happens, the better for all. So I think that's an item that should have a even potentially a placeholder on the agenda. I think at one time last year it did, to continue to work on that process. Other members of the board, future items? Member Gaddis? No. Member Powger? No. Member Welton? Member Lacey? Member Cordero? Okay. This takes us down to our next school board meeting. The elections are October 2nd. Don't forget to vote. And October 17th is the next regularly scheduled school board meeting, and it'll be here. This takes us to our next persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Thank you. Again, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive sessions or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may refer to the superintendent designee to take the issue under advisement. Maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This is the last 30-minute segment. Are there any members of the public that would like to come and speak before the board on non-agenda items? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Terry Snyder. It was interesting hearing you take under advisement the Alaska School Board Association things. And I find a lot of what transpires here sort of a mixture of your personal ideologies and getting wrapped around the wheel of personal rights. And I think that's something you want to rethink in the future a little bit on some of these things. I'd like to wish Mr. Dunleavy good luck in his future endeavor and if the, you know, what the result is, what the voters say. And I'd like to challenge him, if you do find yourself in Juneau, to come out front and be the first person to ask the state to fund education first. That this picking the carcass at the end of the session isn't fair to anybody. And I don't think the kids, I don't think the district, I don't think your superintendents, your staff needs to be held hostage anymore. And, you know, that is something we can all agree on. It's part of our duty to our public is to educate. So why it's left as the last thing, and I see this hamster wheel that everybody runs on trying to figure out what their budget is and the amount of money that's spent doing that and the ill will that is created by that process should be taken in consideration. And, you know, I think you'll be challenged being, you know, a junior senator, but I think that you have an ability to lead. And the state is certainly looking for a leader in education that will put aside his or her ideologies and do what's right for kids. And that's to fund in the future and fund first. So good luck.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak before the board on non-agenda items? This takes us down to correspondence, board committee reports. Any correspondence? Committee reports? There's no site selection committee reports?
I was not at the last site selection.
Thank you. Do you want to report, Member Welton?
I was there, and we worked through some things, but it's hard, very hard to sit there. We'll see what happens with the new board, and we have to go through the hoops to get the appointments on the site selection committee and to be approved by the assembly. So, that might prove to be an issue. So that's it for my report.
Thank you. Comments from school board and administration. Dr. Perarmo.
No comments.
Member McPhail.
No comments.
Member Cordero.
As I have mentioned to previous school board presidents, thank you for serving. Good luck. I may not have agreed with you 100% on everything because we certainly disagree on some things. But thank you for serving. And I, too, challenge you to be that torch that brings education to the forefront, because 90 days of session sometimes might not be enough. And I do agree that sometimes education takes the back burner. So thank you.
Member Lacey.
Yes, I'm going to be going to a lot more schools in the next coming months, and I'll have more reports. But I want to point out that that little presentation that Mr. Forrest did on our schools does not do justice to how well they're being maintained. Some years ago, I personally thought our schools were going to fall apart. I go to them now, and I think, man, these are really nice buildings. So, and it shows. Thank you.
Member Welton.
I, too, have been to schools, and I visited Iditarod for their open house. And, it's interesting. There's several of my former students are teachers there. It just amazes me. I've been here that long. And they are teaching in our schools. And they're enthusiastic, and it's fantastic to see that. Justice Coalition did happen this morning, and Lucy Hope was there. It was good to have her sit in. We had understanding of new shelters that have opened for youth in the valley. There will be an open house on the 27th, but I don't have the time. But there's a shelter for kids in Palmer and in Wasilla, and we lost the Saxton shelter. At least we have some place to put children right now. And there is a treatment facility as well, a level 3. And we haven't had those for a while, and it's good because we'll be able to bring some of our kids home from treatment at outside facilities. So good to know that, and it was good to talk with others who are providers for our youth in our valley. And again, that time is the third Wednesday of every month, 7:30 at the Windbreak, and anybody can come who's interested in working with youth. We generally have a good information processing. Thank you. And I do want to say thank you to Mr. Dunleavy for his service, serving as your vice president. I appreciate the time that you put in, recognize that you have a lot of work ahead of you.
Thank you. Member Powager.
I want to say thanks for the hard work you've done the last few years on the school board, and we're hoping for good things for you down in Juneau.
Thank you. Member Gaddis.
No comment. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'd just like to thank all the folks that work for the district, parents, students. And I like a challenge, and I look forward to it. So thank you very much for the time that we've had together. Is there a motion to end the meeting?
I'd like to make a motion that we move end this meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Welton. With no dissent, meeting's over. Thank you very much.